The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. Please exercise caution for children under 13. Kathleen O'Brien had never had more fun in all her 17 years. Of every Irish festival, Beltane was her favorite. Beginning at sunset on April 30th, it celebrated the transition from spring to summer. And this year, Kathleen was celebrating something even bigger, adulthood. It was the first time she got to go out on her own. And luckily, she'd stumbled into the best party she'd ever seen. The bonfire sparked and crackled almost 30 feet in the air. The fiddler played with otherworldly speed. The dancers, with flowers in their hair and embroidered red and green tunics, jumped and spun around the bonfire with skill and precision. And everyone was so welcoming to her. Kathleen found it odd that she'd never seen anyone at the party in town, but she was having too much fun to worry. After hours of dancing, Kathleen's feet began to blister. Sweat matted her hair to her forehead. She needed a break. She excused herself from her new companions and stepped away from the fire. Off to the side, in the cool, dewy grass, Kathleen saw an elegant woman with a crown of flowers in her hair and a sleeping baby in her arms.
"What a darling child!" Kathleen cooed. "I just love babies. Do you mind?"
The beautiful woman smiled and passed her child into Kathleen's arms. Kathleen stroked the baby's chubby cheeks.
"Thank you so much for letting me join your party. I've had such a wonderful time. I wish this night would never end."
The woman grinned and handed Kathleen a tiny emerald jewelry box. "The best nights never do," she said with a twinkle in her eye. "When you're having fun, they can go on forever." Kathleen felt a shiver run down her spine. A prick on the back of her neck told her she was about to get her wish. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Spotify original from Parcast. Every Wednesday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today, we're getting lost in the Irish countryside in A Year and a Day, an Irish folktale about a family's desperate and otherworldly hunt to find their missing daughter. Coming up, Kathleen O'Brien's first grown-up holiday takes a surprising turn. A Year and a Day by William Henry Frost was published in 1900 as part of his collection, Fairies and Folk of Ireland. At the time, there were numerous other volumes on Irish folklore, including high-profile releases from William Butler Yeats and Oscar Wilde. But Frost's anthology stands out for two significant reasons. For one, Frost wasn't Irish. He was an American author, reporter, and drama critic. Second, Frost was candid about the fact that he did not collect these stories himself. Instead, he relied on other collections of Irish fairy tales, including that of Yeats, for his retellings. In fact, in his prologue, he carefully delineates from which collections he borrowed. Besides Frost's delicate and respectful treatment of Irish tales that were previously collected, his anthology also differs from similar volumes for additional reasons. Most other books were loose hodgepodges of unrelated stories. Fairies and Folk of Ireland has a cohesive throughline. Even though it contains several unique stories, the stories follow one family's history. With A Year and a Day, Frost chronicles the O'Brien's adventure on Beltane, the festival that kicks off the beginning of summer. Beltane is one of the four Gaelic seasonal festivals and celebrates life and fertility. The counterpart to Beltane is Samhain, the festival of death that signals the start of the winter. The two festivals were thought to be the time when the veil between the earthly realm and the home of the fairies, the other world, was the thinnest. Which meant that at Beltane, blessings from fairies were plentiful, but so were tricks. The fairies were known to tempt young people into the woods to join them in the other world. And once you were there, you might be stuck forever. Kathleen O'Brien's fingers worked as quickly as possible. They danced, tying primrose flowers into her family cow's tail. Yet she was distracted. All she could think about was tonight's festival. It was her village's annual Beltane celebration. Now that she was 17, she was allowed to go to the party on her own. Her best friend Maggie Sullivan was coming to fetch her any minute, and she still wasn't dressed. But she had to finish tying these flowers first. She had promised her grandmother they would protect the family cows from any otherworldly creatures out tonight.
"All done, Grandma," she said with a sigh of relief. "Can I get ready now?"
Grandma Ellen waddled over to inspect Kathleen's handiwork. Even though the old woman had lived with her for the last decade, Kathleen still didn't know much about her. She was a strange old woman, obsessed with fairies and curses, but she came when Kathleen's dad needed her most, and Kathleen was thankful for that. Ellen squinted at the primrose garland.
"This flower is too loose," she muttered.
Kathleen watched her grandmother's arthritic fingers reattach several flowers with expert precision.
"There," Ellen said finally. "Now the cow will be protected from the fairies, and she'll give us milk for the entire year."
Kathleen smiled anxiously as her grandma took her by the hands.
"You know, the good people will be out in full force tonight," Ellen whispered. "Everything from this cow's milk to your own fertility will be decided at the celebration. It's why we tie these knots and march through the fires. It's why we relight the hearth with the bonfire."
Kathleen wasn't sure she believed in fairies, the good people, as her grandmother called them. It seemed a little silly, but Kathleen humored her grandma. She nodded,
"Yes, Grammy, I know. I've already cleaned out the hearth. We will be safe from the good people. Now, if I may, I need to get ready for the dance."
Ellen held on to Kathleen for another moment. Kathleen's heart warmed as her grandma squeezed her hands lovingly.
"I remember my first Beltane when I turned 17. We snuck away at midnight to roll in the dew. Your grandfather came calling the next day."
Ellen blushed, recounting the story. Kathleen had never seen her grandma turn red before. It was adorable. Of course, Kathleen doubted that the first dew of summer would make her irresistible to men, but it seemed like a fun tradition.
Kathleen whispered, "Just don't tell Pa. He's having a hard enough time letting me go out alone already."
Ellen gave her a wink.
"You're already the fairest. It's our little secret."
Kathleen's father, John, appeared in the doorway, the afternoon sun pouring in behind him. He tugged uncomfortably at his topcoat, nervously fidgeting with its buttons. The farmer wasn't one for a suit, but he enjoyed Beltane as much as the rest of the O'Briens. It was the one time of the year when he drank to his heart's content. John waved for Kathleen and called out,
"Whatever nonsense you're up to, leave her be, Ma. That Sullivan girl will be here any minute. Kathleen, you two stay together. Stick to the main roads. Don't go off with any strange boys."
Kathleen jumped in.
"Pa!"
Her father gave her a quick nod.
Of course. You know, I just worry."
Kathleen did know. Worrying was one of his chief characteristics. The man rarely let his guard down and never let his daughter out of his sight. But Kathleen didn't blame him. She knew he just couldn't bear to lose a daughter after losing a wife. So she gave Ellen's hands a final squeeze and then planted a reassuring kiss on her father's cheek.
"I'll be fine. Ma wouldn't want you worrying about me."
Then she gave a cheery wave as she ran off to put on her finery and laughed with excitement as John's voice shouted after her,
"Don't forget, you're in charge of bringing back the fire. Our luck for the next year rests on you."
What a night she had ahead of her. She'd never felt so free in her life. Kathleen gave her beau a final prim in the hall before running out the door in the fresh evening air. At the end of the driveway, Maggie bounced back and forth on her tiptoes, unable to contain her excitement.
"Hurry! Terry said he was going to play a special song for you tonight."
Kathleen rolled her eyes. Maggie's brother, Terry Sullivan, was the last thing on her mind. She wasn't going to get all dewy and make herself irresistible for a dullard like him. But there were other boys. Kathleen snatched Maggie's hand and pulled her off the path into the woods.
"Do you think there's any dew on the grass yet? Do we roll in it or just rub it on our face? Do we get naked?"
Maggie cackled with delight.
"We roll in it, fully clothed, but it's too early. We have to wait. In the meantime, let's go say hello to Terry. It'll make his night. Please?"
Kathleen knew she didn't have much of a choice, but she sighed as she gazed around at the lush forest. The rich greens and budding flowers were soaking in the last rays of sunset. It was all so beautiful. Terry, meanwhile, was not even an impressive fiddler. Although someone was playing off in the woods very well. In fact, it sounded like a party. Kathleen could hear people dancing, too.
"Do you hear that?"
Kathleen asked. Maggie shrugged.
"Hear what? The birds?"
Kathleen shook her head in disbelief.
"You don't hear that music?"
Maggie drew back, confused.
"Are you joking? There's nothing back there but the pond. Come on, let's go before it gets too dark."
Maggie turned back towards the road, but Kathleen stayed put. She knew she heard music, and it was getting louder. Kathleen could hear an exasperated Maggie behind her.
"I'm not getting my dress dirty. I'll leave you."
But Kathleen just shook her head, squinting through the brush. She had to know where this music was coming from.
"Go on, it's fine. I'll see you at the party,"
she called out, not even bothering to look back at Maggie. Then she stepped further into the brush. Just beyond the next layer of leaves and bushes, the sound gave way to sight. Kathleen could see the orange glow of a bonfire peeking through the tree line. Dancers in green tunics and white dresses bobbed up and down in the firelight. It looked like they were coming straight out of the Rath, the ancient mound of dirt next to the pond. But that had to be her eyes playing tricks on her. She eased closer. And then she entered the clearing. The music enveloped her like a cloak. Her feet started dancing, pulling her into the pulsing circles of revelers. She felt an unfamiliar, euphoric sensation flood through her limbs. And then she noticed the feet of the revelers surrounding her. None of them were touching the ground. Kathleen had found the fairies. Coming up, John O'Brien realizes his daughter is missing.
Hi, it's Carter from Parcast, and I'm hosting the new limited series, Hollywood Scandals. We all know that Tinseltown is the land of glitz and glamour, but look closer, past the allure of bright lights and red carpets. There, you'll find a more disturbing tale. One filled with tragedies and transgressions so damaging, they've turned hopes and dreams into high-profile nightmares. Every Monday on this Spotify original, discover the real-life dramas of some of entertainment's biggest names. from the mysterious drowning of Natalie Wood and the murder trials of comedian Fatty Arbuckle to the star clients of Hollywood Madam Heidi Fleiss. Each episode of Hollywood Scandals has been curated from shows across the Parcast network, covering over a century's worth of controversies, from the silent era into the digital age. Fame and fortune may be fleeting, but scandals, they stand the test of time. Follow the Spotify original from Parcast, Hollywood Scandals. Listen free only on Spotify.
Now back to the story. John awoke at dawn, still in his finest suit. His head was pounding, and even the soft purple light filling the room seemed a bit harsh. This year's Beltane Festival was one for the ages. John sat up in bed and wrapped his topcoat around him. It was freezing. He shouted across the house,
"Kathleen O'Brien, did you forget to bring back the fire?"
There was no answer. Relighting the hearth with the Beltane bonfire was mostly done for his superstitious mother, but practically speaking, without the fire, they had no heat. John shouted again,
"Kathleen, wake up!"
But there was no answer. He stumbled out of bed and down the hall toward Kathleen's room. He knocked on the door. When there was no answer, John nudged it open.
"I want to see your mother again too, but freezing us all to death isn't the way to..."
He trailed off. Kathleen was not in her room, and her bed was neatly made, just as she'd left it the night before. John couldn't help but smile. She must have stayed out all night, truly her father's daughter. If she was with Maggie, she would be fine. Peter Sullivan wouldn't let anything happen to the girls. He would go check with him, just as soon as he got that fire going. John eased the door shut and shuffled into the living room. It was like his hangover was slowly working its way down to his feet and crippling every joint in between. He bent down into the hearth and struck a match. The front door opened behind him. He could hear the sound of a torch burning. It must be Kathleen dragging in, he thought.
"So, you finally found your way home?"
he asked. But instead of Kathleen's perky voice, he heard his mother.
"Don't you dare light that fire with that match. I went out myself for it this morning. Don't make my whole trip a waste."
John dropped the match and cleared a path for his mother. The heat seemed to melt some of the hangover away. He was already feeling better.
"Did you see Kathleen when you were out?"
he asked.
"She didn't come home."
Ellen shrugged her shoulders.
"Why do you think I went to get fire?"
John headed for the door.
"She's probably at the Sullivans. I'll go fetch her."
Ellen shook her head.
"Don't bother. Ran into Terry in town. He hadn't seen her."
A chill went down John's spine.
"She... what? Where else would she be?"
"Maybe she's asleep in the hayloft," he thought. It was always a favorite napping place for her as a child. He hurried to the barn and quickly climbed the ladder, but it was as empty as her bed. John leapt from the loft to the ground and grabbed his horse. In a flash, he tore out of the barn and headed toward the Sullivans. Maybe she was asleep in their barn. That was it. That's why Terry didn't see her. John rode through the woods, pushing the horse as fast as she would go. The whole way, his mind raced. What if Kathleen was hurt? What if she's lost? That all seemed highly unlikely. They lived in a safe little village. John's breath stopped. The reins dropped from his hands as one final thought flooded his mind. What if she had an accident? He suddenly realized where he was. The site of the last deadly accident in County Limerick. It was May some 15 years ago on this very same road. His wife, Kitty, had taken the coach to Dublin to visit family. The driver should have seen the rushing water coming over the bridge, but he probably thought he could make it. They reached the top point of the bridge just as the river surged. The mass of water waylaid the horses and carriage and carried them into the ravine. The coach was wedged between the rushing water and rocks below. They were found by a passerby hours later. By the time John arrived an hour after that, the water had receded. All that was left was the shattered coach and his wife's body draped over the wagon wheel. There wasn't a drop of blood. The water had washed all of it away. As John's horse galloped over the rebuilt bridge, he couldn't help but glance over the side where Kitty once laid. There was no body down below, thank God. It meant that at least in his mind, Kathleen was still alive. He shuddered anyway and spurred his horse on faster. Soon, the red roof of the Sullivan's barn peaked on the horizon. He was almost there. John pounded on the Sullivan's front door. A sleepy-eyed Maggie pulled open the door. John didn't bother with pleasantries.
"Where's Kathleen?"
he pressed. Maggie blinked, half asleep.
"Isn't she home in bed?"
John gritted his teeth, exasperated.
"Do you think I'd be here waking you up if she was?"
Maggie snapped out of her groggy slumber.
"The last I remember, she wandered into the woods, said she heard music, but I didn't hear anything. I assumed she went home after she didn't show up at the party."
John felt his stomach twist into a knot. The color drained from his face, but he tried to focus.
"Maybe she's in your barn," he said.
He ran to the Sullivans' white clapboard barn, but it was empty too. There was no sign of his daughter anywhere. Maggie appeared behind him.
"She probably met up with the McCarthy girls. Check there."
John didn't linger. Without a word, he spun on his heels and ran for his horse. John rode to the far side of town without stopping. He scanned every ravine, glen, and gully along the way. The image of Kitty burned in his mind. Only now, the face wasn't his wife's, it was Kathleen's. John frantically knocked on Finn McCarthy's door. The world faded away as Finn told him they hadn't seen Kathleen all night. John was so shaken he could barely prop himself up on the horse. It was nearly a full day since he last saw his daughter. There was only one place left to go. John rushed into the county police station. He couldn't stop his hands from shaking. He wasn't sure if it was the grief or the fact that he had yet to eat anything all day. He nearly collapsed on the front desk.
"Has anybody seen my Kathleen?"
A constable in a navy blue uniform shook his head. The only people they had at the station were a few drunken brawlers from last night. John swallowed hard. He had one more question, which he dreaded to ask.
"Any accidents last night?"
The constable checked the records. No accidents reported. She was probably waiting at home for him, but either way, they'd keep an eye out for her. John nodded. That had to be it. She was waiting for him at home now. They'd just missed each other in the morning. With that glimmer of hope, he ducked outside, mounted his horse one more time, and took off across town. It was completely dark by the time John arrived home. He nearly tripped over himself rushing into the house, certain that she would be waiting inside. He put his hand on the door handle. He couldn't bring himself to turn it. If Kathleen wasn't there, he wasn't sure what he would do next. But he had to. John took a deep breath and turned the knob. Inside, Ellen sat by the hearth alone. He could tell by the look on her face that Kathleen wasn't there. John shook his head.
"Nobody's seen her since last night. Maggie said she wandered into the woods over by the old pond."
His words trailed off, and John collapsed on the floor. Ellen didn't bother moving him. She simply threw a blanket over his body. She sat in a chair next to him, a cup of warm tea at the ready. Hours later, when he finally awoke, his mother passed him the tea.
"Don't worry, she's still alive."
John looked desperately at his mother.
"How do you know?"
Ellen cupped her son's face in her hands.
"Because I didn't hear a banshee. I always hear one before a family member dies."
John snapped. "That's not true. You didn't hear one when Kitty died."
Ellen leaned back in her chair.
"In fact, I did," she whispered.
The words pained her.
"I didn't tell you."
John's eyes grew wide.
"What do you mean?" he asked.
His mother swallowed hard.
"I thought it was coming from me. I thought it was my time, so I didn't tell you."
John shook his head in disbelief. It was too much for him to absorb today. Ellen saw the pain in her son's eyes. She tried to comfort him.
"This is good news. If Kathleen wandered through the woods on Beltana, she's still alive. She's with the good people now."
John threw his teacup at the wall.
"My daughter is gone, and you want to humor me with pixies?"
Ellen slapped her son across the mouth. John froze. His mother hadn't hit him for many years. He could see the fire behind her eyes. She squinted at him.
"Fairies, John, and we've got one chance to get your daughter back. But you must do exactly as I say."
Coming up, the fight for Kathleen begins. Now back to the story. Grandma Ellen's body nearly shook with excitement. She grinned wildly as she clasped her hands around John's face.
"Don't you worry. She's alive and dancing with the fairies. We'll have to wait, but we'll get her back next Beltana."
John's jaw dropped, dumbfounded. "She's finally gone mad," John thought. He always knew she adored the old ways and was a strong believer in the other world, in pixies and banshees, but for her to suggest that his daughter had been taken by the fairies was a step too far. John tried to remain calm.
"You want me to sit around and pretend that everything is fine while we wait a whole year to find my daughter? That's your plan?"
Ellen's eyes twinkled.
"Your lack of faith has always held you back. My plan is to do everything I can to appease the good people for the next year. We'll make offerings, we'll leave treats. If they're happy with us, we might be able to get our Kathleen back."
John couldn't listen to this. He turned his back on his mother and walked into his daughter's room. John collapsed onto Kathleen's bed. He wrapped his arms around her pillow and buried his face into it. Tears streamed down his face as he wept uncontrollably. His heart was broken in two. Ellen rapped lightly on the doorframe. John turned to look at her. Her eyes were wet, but her face held steely resolve.
"You can believe me or you cannot, but she's still out there, and crying will not bring her back. Do you want my help?"
John sat up in bed and wiped the tears away from his face.
"Magic and offerings won't save our little girl, but I suppose crying won't either."
Then John promised that until he had proof his little girl was dead, he wasn't going to give up. He spent the next 2 weeks combing the countryside. He went village by village, checking every home and barn. He filed reports with the nearby police stations. He posted notices in pubs and general stores. He subscribed to every town's newspaper, desperate for any kind of a lead. Every time there was a knock on the front door, his heart leapt. Maybe it's Kathleen. But it never was. The weeks turned into months. Every day for John was the same. Tend the cows, read every paper he could find, and search for any sign of Kathleen. Throughout this time, John could barely look at his mother. She refused to help him with the actual search. Instead, the crazed woman spent all her time trying to appease the good people with plates of butter and shiny trinkets. Finally, Samhain approached. With the festival of death at hand, Ellen's efforts to court the fairies escalated. It made John ill to watch his mother put all her effort into weaving Rowan crosses and leaving their best milk by the front door. Then again, everything made him ill at this point. He couldn't eat or sleep. He had abandoned all care of the cows to the milkmaids. Throughout the winter, he hardly moved, slumped into a chair by the fire, flipping through page after page of newspapers. He never warmed up, and he never felt cold. He just felt vacant. Each day was more miserable than the one before. Then, one afternoon, the door to John's room flung open. John jolted upright. He tried to get his bearings as Ellen marched over to his bed and wrapped her bony hands around his arm. She told him to get dressed. John jerked his hand away. "What does it matter?" he grumbled. "She's gone." Ellen shook with excitement, clasping her hands around his arm once again.
"Not anymore. It's April 30th. At sundown, it will be Beltane. Tonight, we get Kathleen back."
Guilt washed over John. How could he forget? Had it really been 365 days since he last saw his sweet Kathleen? Ellen sat on the bed next to her son and wrapped her arm around his shoulder. John leaned his head onto his mother's and closed his eyes. She patted his head.
"I know, Johnny, but you can't give up. Not today. Today's the day."
John opened his eyes and nodded. His mother was right. Today was not the day to feel sorry for himself. John shuffled into the kitchen, shocked to see someone else sitting at the table. It was Maggie Sullivan, Kathleen's friend. She smiled nervously.
"Hi, Mr. O'Brien," she said. "Are you coming with us to find Kathleen?"
John stood slack-jawed. He couldn't believe his mother had roped in someone else. Ellen marched into the kitchen behind him.
"Don't mind him, Maggie. He's not a believer yet, but he will be."
She fixed them both a pot of tea and explained the plan.
"Maggie and I have been scouting out the woods around the pond. I know exactly where she'll be. You coming, or are you going to stay here and sulk?"
John stared into his mother's eyes. They were clear and bright. He thought, is there any harm in humoring her for once, especially after nothing else had worked? He nodded. "For Kathleen." While the rest of the town celebrated at the Beltane Festival, Ellen led John and Maggie off the path and into the woods. They followed the exact steps Maggie and Kathleen took the year before. But when they got to the point where the two girls had separated, John stopped. It felt like sacrilege, recreating Kathleen's last moments. But Ellen was delighted.
"Look, Johnny, right here. You see that round mound of dirt by the pond? That's the fairy rath. That's where we'll find your daughter."
John could see the certainty in his mother's eyes, but all he could do was shrug.
"I don't see anything but a hill."
Still, John knew, one way or another, this was the end. Either his mother was right, or Kathleen was truly gone. He took a deep breath and allowed himself to hope. Maybe it really was a fairy wrath. John stepped into the brush. He was going to follow his mother. The twilight gave them just enough light to see. They carefully walked through the rustling leaves toward the pond. There, Ellen walked into the clearing. She held up a tiny wreath made of rowan branches in front of her eye, like a monocle. John bristled. The old woman looked ridiculous. "What is she doing?" John mumbled beneath his breath. Maggie eagerly chimed in.
"The rowan circle lets her see the fairy world. It's how she's going to find Kathleen."
John inched closer. "You're saying they're here now?" John froze. He could hear the sound of a fiddle being played. It felt like the musician was right in front of him, but he knew that was impossible. It had to be coming from the festival. That was the only logical explanation. But the music grew louder. He glanced toward Maggie, who looked dumbstruck. She could hear the music too. Something was happening, though John had no idea what. Slowly, tiny dots of light began to sparkle around them. He watched as Ellen tiptoed across the clearing, whirling and twirling as if she was dodging invisible dancers. It had been decades since he saw his mother move so gracefully. A smile spread across Ellen's face.
"John, at my command, run and grab Kathleen. She's not going to understand, and she won't come willingly. We'll have to drag her out."
John's heart raced. His mother spun toward the middle of the clearing, her eyes fixed on a twinkle of light that shined just a bit brighter. Slowly, she lifted her hand, then snatched hold of the air. Ellen struggled against some invisible force, pulling with all her might. John's eyes widened as something came into focus, a hazy, human-like shape. First arms, then a body, and then a face. He gasped. It was Kathleen. Ellen shouted,
"John, now!"
John sprinted for his mother. He wrapped his arms around Kathleen and pulled. She dug her heels into the dirt, struggling against her father, but John wasn't letting go. Tears streamed down his face. He shouted,
"Kathleen, come to me!"
With a final pull, Kathleen was wrenched from the fairy world and fell into his arms. It was her. Flesh and blood, kicking and screaming.
"I have to say goodbye to my friends," she yelled.
But Ellen shouted at John just as urgently,
"Take her straight home."
And for once, John listened to his mother. He and Maggie dragged Kathleen away from the pond and back toward the road. There, John finally got Kathleen to settle down, though he couldn't do much for himself. He was overwhelmed. He couldn't take his eyes off of her, relying on Maggie to guide them back to the farm. It was there that Kathleen finally turned to her father. She reached up and kissed him on the cheek.
"I know I should have checked in this morning, but I didn't think you'd worry so much. I wasn't gone but a day."
John raised his eyebrows.
"A year and a day, love. You've been gone a year and a day."
John held his daughter a little tighter. At home, Kathleen sat by the fire. Next to the chair were stacks and stacks of old newspapers, a year's worth. Her pa was right. She'd been gone a year. She sipped her tea and tried to make sense of it. The more Kathleen tried to recall where she'd been, the foggier the memory became. The queen, the baby, the dancing. If it really had been a year, where had she been this whole time? Did time move differently there? Kathleen excused herself. She needed to rest. Maybe when she woke up, her memory would return. Her room was just as she left it, though a layer of dust had settled over everything. Kathleen sank down onto her bed. It was then that she noticed something in her apron pocket, a tiny emerald jewelry box, the one the fairy queen gave her. Somehow, it was all true. She had been gone both a year and a day.
Story
Stories of humans missing time in mythical realms are plentiful the world over, from China to Scandinavia. But what makes a year and a day unique isn't the plot, but the protagonists. John and Ellen are at the center of the story in the human realm, not Kathleen in the other world. The heart of the tale is the worry and grief of those left behind. This theme was timely in the 1900s when Frost published his folk tales. Before the internet and cell phones, and before landlines or reliable mail service, parents had to trust that somewhere out in the world, their children were doing just fine. The story also served as a reminder to the children that leave home. While you might be having fun dancing the night away, somewhere, someone is worried sick about you. A timely message that has stood the test of time. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back next Wednesday with a new and exciting story. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify. If you enjoy listening to Tales, you'll love my other podcast, Mythology. Mythology retells our oldest stories as an engaging audio drama. Every Tuesday, join me and a cast of voice actors as we dramatize the enduring legends that have shaped human culture since the very beginning. Join me next week for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales is a Spotify original from Parcast. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler. Sound design by Russell Nash, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Travis Clark. This episode of Tales was written by Jesse Harris, with writing assistance by Nora Battelle, fact-checking by Adriana Romero, and research by Mickey Taylor. I'm Vanessa Richardson.
Hey there, Carter again. Before you go, remember to check out my new Parcast limited series, Hollywood Scandals. In anticipation of the Oscars, we're unearthing some of the most sordid controversies in showbiz history. Tune in every Monday. Follow Hollywood Scandals free only on Spotify.